Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and it's time for an amazing podcast all about exosomes. Today, we dive deep into exosomes with my good friend and colleague, Dr. Jordan Plews, and he's with the fabulous company called Elevi Exosomes. So, welcome, Jordan, to the podcast.
Thank you.
And I'm going to tell you a little bit about his background because it's not every day that you get an actual scientist who creates an actual skincare line. And he is quite talented. He's actually got his studies in biochemical engineering and bioprocess development. And his research is focused on stem cells and regenerative medicine for, I think, since your graduate years, right?
Yeah.
And how many years are you postgraduate?
Well, I did about a couple years of postdoc at Stanford, and then I broke away and I went into biotech for a number of years, and then started my own companies. So Elevi started in 2020, right before the pandemic.
And you co-founded another company, Zytogen Biotech, in 2015.
That's right.
And that was also topical stem cell skincare solutions. And so for this last five-year period, you've really generated this multi-million dollar line that's selling quite well across the country. And what I love about Jordan is he's going to break down the science of exosomes. When I go to meetings these days, I see so many different exosomes booths, and all of them with marketing misinformation, I like to call it. And I really want injectors, doctors, surgeons, people out there listening to understand what are the really relevant, important issues, and how do you critique an exosome formulation?
Yeah, sure. Should we start from the top?
Let's dive right in.
Yeah. So for me, there's probably four or five major pillars. Number one is source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are these exosomes coming from? A real exosome is emitted or released from a cell. There's a lot of companies now that are using other terms. They're using the word exosome when it's not referring to something coming from a cell.
Wait, let's start with super basic. So definition of an exosome?
Yeah.
What's an exosome?
So an exosome is a nano-sized lipid envelope, effectively. It's got a lipid bilayer,
mm-hmm.
similar to the lipid bilayer that protects the cell wall of your cells.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually emits from the side of the cell out into the intercellular space. And these are 30 to about 150 nanometers. You know, varies a little bit in the literature, but that's about the range. So we're talking about something that's less than 1/100th the size of a cell. Has a lipid bilayer, and inside you've got RNA, you've got proteins, a little bit of water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you're manufacturing what goes into the exosome inside the lipid envelope, how do you decide what's the most potent mixture, what ends up in there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we start with the source. If we go back to 2001, you had TNS serum, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was using fibroblasts.
Made by Skin Medica.
Made by Skin Medica.
Yeah, it was a topical.
Yeah.
I can't remember what TNS stand for.
It was a tissue nutrient system.
Tissue nutrient serum, that's right,
yeah.
Serum. Yeah.
So that was a fibroblast that they were getting from, I believe, foreskin leftovers,
mm-hmm.
and growing that out in the lab. And the liquid on top of that, the liquid's called media. And as the cells are growing in the media, they are said to condition the media. And that mix was then put into a topical as an ingredient. And effectively, a fibroblast is an interesting cell. It's one of the cells of the skin, but there's many others.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, we realized what's better than a fibroblast is a stem cell.
Mm-hmm.
And we want specifically what are known as MSCs or mesenchymal stem cells. There's a few other names for them. But effectively, we're talking about the cells that are your first responders when it comes to healing and repair. We're not talking about embryonic stem cells or fetal or anything like that. That's unethical, generally accepted as unethical to use those cells. So the earliest, youngest mesenchymal stem cells you can get are right after birth. And so we're pulling them from the Morton's jelly portion of the umbilical cord from consenting donors. But other people have pulled them from adipose tissue, from bone marrow, and they exist across the body, even around the edge of your iris and your eye. These are the first responders when you get burned, cut, wounded, etc.
Great. So you came upon the idea of using the Wharton's jelly as a source.
Mm-hmm.
And then talk a little bit about strength and efficacy, because I've seen advertising for exosomes talking about billions and zillions and the quantity of exosomes present.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a little misleading.
Yeah. So if you think about an exosome, like one cell is sending another cell a message. It's like a piece of mail, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the quality of that mail is reflective of the author. So we have to start with the right author, the stem cell, because we believe that's the most powerful cell. And there is data now to show that the younger the cell is, the better the exosome profile is. So starting with an age zero stem cell is better than starting with something that's pulled from, say, an obese person who's having liposuction done and you're pulling the fat out. And so there's a variety of things you want to think about here. But I previously had a company, like I mentioned before, where we were using adipose-derived stem cells. But when we had the opportunity to use age zero, it was that next step up. So talking about potency, right source, younger source, and then of course, as you're growing cells out in the laboratory, they're dividing and dividing, you don't want them to divide too much, right?
How do you guys measure that? Because I think previously, there were some concerns that perhaps the donor cell lines were getting exhaustion from multiple cycles of breeding them and then keeping that strain running until you get another donor.
Yeah, so if you look at the 12 hallmarks of aging, which is a popular paper in Cell, one of their 12 hallmarks is stem cell exhaustion. So you can have stem cell exhaustion because your stem cells in your body are just running out, right? We're dividing over time. And you can create that in the laboratory by dividing too many times. So every time you split the cell from one dish to two, two to four, etc., that's called a passage. So we only use what are called low passage stem cells. So, you know, very low number of divisions. And these are cells that are healthy, they're young, they're in their what are called exponential growth phase. And so as they're growing, they're releasing more exosomes. It actually is not only worse to use the older ones, but they produce exosomes that are not as good and not as plentiful.
Right, so and their messaging may not be great.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. And then how are you measuring efficacy? Like how do you know when the potency is dying down and it's time to switch cell lines?
Yeah, so we have a, it's part of our PREX process. We have a set number of divisions that we use, and once it hits that point, a certain number of passages, and we follow cell count throughout that as well.
I know you just had a baby, a three-month-old. Boy or girl?
Boy.
Boy, how cute. And did you harvest his umbilical cord blood stem cells or his Wharton's jelly?
Yeah, both. I think traditionally you just save the cord blood these days. Some companies are doing both. The cord blood, you can use it for certain things like leukemia. The MSCs are more like you're planning for future. You don't know yet what they're going to allow, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you envision a day where sometime he'll be able to get his own product, like his own MSCs, his ankle stem cells, and have a topical injectable product? Like maybe he can get his own filler, his own little microneedling exosome serum for his very own DNA?
Possibly. I mean, personally, I'm thinking more like, God forbid anything really serious happened.
Yeah, but, like the banking of the stem cells. Yeah. That's so great. 20 years ago, my kids had twins, and they both had their stem cell cord blood harvested, but God knows, like, how long do those things stay frozen like popsicles for? Hopefully for a long, long time.
If they're preserved properly in liquid nitrogen, I believe they can go decades, yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. And where is your laboratory where you grow up all these cells and things?
Our main lab is in Northern California. So we started near Stanford in the Bay Area in San Jose. We moved over to Davis, and then now we're more in the Sacramento area. We get a bit more space, so we've expanded a few times.
What are your pet peeves when you go to meetings and you must see all these competitor booths popping up with product, and like the word exosome is now everywhere in aesthetics, and I think that it's hard for the consumer, us, like the doctors, injectors, nurses, PAs out there, it's hard for us to differentiate what's the real important messaging. So what are your pet peeves that you say you see it and you're just cringing?
Yeah, well, you brought up earlier kind of billions and millions and trillions of people have use the number of exosomes as a marketing ploy. And I think ultimately a lot of stuff is marketed this way, right? Just give me the number, bigger is better. It's a very American idea, bigger is better. But I think the reality with biology is it's not that way, right? I see a lot of companies going down that route, and we know, like if you're gonna do hormone replacement therapy, right? That's
more
not a
not
bigger is better, right?
Yeah. More steroids is not better, not necessarily. Yeah, the quality of the messaging and what you brought up with the donor product, to me, that is so critical. I already am a little concerned about the thought of any other human's DNA or RNA or anything with immune, you know, antigens coming into my body, whether topically or not. Do you think we have to be concerned about immune sensitivities with exosomes?
I think everything has to be really looked at carefully, right? Is it possible to create bad exosomes? Yes, 100%. Like you need to be starting with the right cell population. Do I believe that people are out there selling, you know, dangerous exosomes? No, I think you'd have to be malicious. You'd have to be growing a line that you knew was unhealthy to produce the exosomes to begin with. I don't believe that anyone has taken enough time to build a company around something that bad. I do think that some people are overinflating how good what they're doing is, or maybe they're selling something more, and that creates problems for the rest of us that are really trying to be science-based about it.
Interesting. And then I have definitely seen people recommending injectable exosomes where there is, you know, very clear definition of how exosomes are permitted to be used in the U.S., which is just for topical skin, cosmeceutical, microneedling application. Am I right?
Yeah. So in the U.S., you have two major groups. You have cosmetic supplement companies, and you have drugs and medical. I mean, my whole undergrad was around developing GMP facilities for cell therapy manufacture, and I've had the privilege of touring many of them. And effectively, in the U.S., if you are making a claim that something's going to treat, cure, diagnose, that is a drug.
Mm-hmm.
If you are putting something on topically and you are not making any claims, it falls into the bucket of cosmetics or cosmeceuticals, unless you go and you make a medical claim on top.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be as simple as like acne, right? So if you want to say my product treats acne, you need to have something that has gone through clinical trials and shown to do that effectively. So exosomes today live in a space where there are topical cosmetic products, but we generated Elevi in large part because what was on the market largely was designed for injection, and we knew that there was going to be a problem with that. And so we said, how can we make something that's truly topical and works?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing that we're having a lot of new products hit the market in aesthetics in terms of like salmon sperm, pDRNA, platelet-derived growth factors. Many things are good, and many things are questionable, but I don't see enough people asking questions. Like, what do you think about that?
Well, one of the things I highlight when I do lecture on some of these conferences is to go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people want to look through and say, is it hype or not? If there's no evidence in the academic literature that there's been a long course of study, it's probably hype.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find if you go to PubMed, you go to Google Scholar, you type in exosomes, you'll find tens of thousands of articles and many more if you add extracellular vesicles, or I think for many years people were even using words like paracrine factors
mm-hmm.
to describe exosomes before they knew
mm-hmm.
that it was exosomes. And that's part of how I ended up in the exosome field, was through work I'd done at Stanford where we were noticing a paracrine effect.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, talk a little bit about how people can use Elevi products and what results are you seeing clinically with your products?
Yeah, so we have two products. We have the Empower and the Infinity, and then we're introducing this new hairline, which we'll talk about later. But this is meant to be used in office or immediately after procedure. It's very gentle, it's concentrated, it's
and
a hyaluronic acid.
That's the exosome post-treatment serum.
That's right.
Yeah, which many, many exosomes are marketing themselves that way to be applied after a laser, or a microneedling, or anything that creates skin trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and so this is something that I think the immediate result that you're seeing is a decrease in redness,
mm-hmm.
right? We know that stem cell exosomes, generally speaking, are arguably helping to quell any sort of redness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what people like, to be able to go back out in the world quickly. But we have the at-home product because we know the healing and the repair doesn't just stop as soon as you get out of the office, right? It's a long process. So if you do a microneedling, you might not see the full result till weeks later. And so it's important to continue to support your skin at home.
Yeah, I love that. I think that that's super huge because we do want to do lasers and needlings, but what's the first thing everybody asks us? Like, how much downtime? How much time away from my regular life? I want the benefit of the laser, but I don't want the downtime. So how much faster would recovery be with or without an exosome?
We've had various reports back, but practitioners usually say about 2 to 3 times faster. And I show some before and afters, and people say, how many days apart are these pictures? And I have to go, no, that's 2 hours later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're not turning you into Wolverine. You're not healing, like, but you can effectively support the skin so that you're getting your best recovery possible.
That's so interesting. And have you done some clinical published studies that show the before and afters? And what do you have coming up for studies?
Yeah, so without giving too much away, we have done a couple clinical studies with two different doctors that very good reputation. That's not published yet, but the study is completed, so we will publish that in the near future. And we've also taken our exosomes and given them to third parties, including academics, gotten some grant money from the Canadian government to study this in depth, looking at the protein content. We also handed off to a third party that looked at the RNA content, did RNA-seq on it. And so we know what kind of microRNA, mRNA is in there, proteins in there, and effectively the profile of these exosomes we know is significantly different and is built to support recovery.
Amazing. Now I want to talk all about hair. I think this is so important. So many of us lost hair and had hair thinning. 30% of women have thinning hair, and it's just really epidemic post-COVID. So you have a new product. Tell me all about it for hair and mitochondria.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, we won the 2022 People's Choice Award at the Octane Technology Forum in Newport, nearby here. And we went back in 2023 to talk about our, you know, what we're doing to grow the company. And the 2023 winner happened to be a company called Yuva Biosciences. Mm-hmm. And so I met their lead scientist, Dr. Keshav Singh, and we were talking about their technology, which boosts mitochondrial health, mm-hmm. and our technology. And he's, you know, I said, this is like a 1 + 1 = 3. We got to put these technologies together. And he said, you know, somewhat jokingly, it's 1 + 1 = 11. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to announce this at the aesthetic show recently. We've got what we call the root renewal system. Mm-hmm. And it's effectively three main products here. We've got the shampoo, a conditioner, and a scalp serum. And then we give you a silicone scalp scrubber as well in here. The real star of the show is the serum. Mm-hmm. And that is similar to Infinity, where we've packed in, you know, we call Infinity our 8-in-1 product. It's got not just the exosomes, but a lot of other clinically proven ingredients. We've tried to do the same here with the hair serum.
Nice.
So there's 2 20-mil vials. So a lot of the hair serums you'll see out there, they're 1 ounce. We're giving you a little bit more than that.
And this is rubbed in every day.
It can be used every day or every other day. So in our early studies, we found that it's very effective even just every other day.
Okay, yeah. Nice. And what's it like, a serum? Sticky,
it's a serum.
Kind of foamy, or?
It's lower viscosity than our daily, but it is a serum.
Mm-hmm.
It's something we imagine you put on at night. You go to bed, and then you might rinse it off in the morning. But very simple to use. It's got an applicator that you can use with one hand to apply it to the areas of concern. And the exosomes, of course, are doing their magic. We've also added things like caffeine and biotin and vitamin B5 that we know work. And then the Yuva Biosciences Y100 is in there. And that is what they call a mitochondrial biogenesis booster.
Mm.
And so effectively, as we age, our mitochondria are breaking down,
mm-hmm.
right? They're kind of like a engine emitting smoke. If you don't change the oil and keep the maintenance right, you're going to have smog issues, right? The mitochondria have the same sort of thing. They're meant to turn over. And when they don't turn over, they start emitting oxidants or free radicals or reactive oxygen species, all these things that we take antioxidants to combat.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively, antioxidants have been a band-aid for this problem. And this is an opportunity to really get to the source of it. And so we're starting with this hair product. We will have skin products in the future that also incorporate this. We did a licensing deal with Yuva to access this technology. And so really, we've got this dual mechanism technology that should mm-hmm. really bring your hair back to its full luster and, you know, really get it back on track, especially, you could say, after COVID or after some kind of trauma that's caused some hair loss.
So interesting. I can't wait to see the results of that. I think it's true that we do flood ourselves with antioxidants in the hope that that's going to quell all the damage, but actually, we were talking earlier about how the mitochondria, when it starts having leaking of its pores and emitting toxic peptides and damaged mitochondrial peptides that send the wrong message to the cell, that's where the real problem starts. So hopefully the Yuva Y100 product is going to close those pores or somehow change the peptides or recycle and remodel and renew the mitochondria.
Yeah, I can't speak to this as eloquently as Dr. Singh, but he's done over 100 papers, 3 books. He's the editor of the Mitochondrion Journal. He's like the mitochondrial expert globally.
Wow.
And so I was lucky enough to speak with him when we launched this in Vegas. And, you know, he mentioned that this is something where you just want your cell to recognize that that mitochondria is broken down
mm-hmm.
and to replace it. It's kind of like this, you know, we've been talking a lot about longevity and You have senescent cells that are kind of getting their 15 minutes right now. Mitochondria play a role in that. Mm-hmm. Like we think of them as the powerhouse of the cell, and that's true, but they also play a role in cell fate, cell signaling, and the mitochondrial dysfunction is one of those 12 hallmarks of aging, right?
Super amazing, yeah.
So this is something that, like, between the intercellular communication, the exosome hallmark, and mitochondrial, we believe that these two hallmarks of aging are actually upstream of a lot of the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can fix both of those, you're actually facilitating a lot of other kind of pro-longevity factors.
I think we're going to find in the future that many, almost every human disease stems from mitochondrial damage and destruction. And you can take a cell that has cancer and a cancerous mitochondria and put it in any other cell, and that cell will become cancer. And vice versa, you can take a normal mitochondria and put it in a cancer cell, and that cell will become normal again. So, like, the power of the story is truly in these little, you know, precursors to, like, if you think about it, mitochondria being the very first bacterial anaerobes that invaded our cells and gave us the ability to breathe on land. Like, there's so much rich genetics and evolution built into them. They are the survival mechanism, I think. I feel. And, you know, this next century of research and disease reversal is going to be related to mitochondria.
I totally agree. And, I mean, this is part of the reason I stepped away from research and moved into more consumer-facing, as this impatience to try to take technology and bring it and make it more practical. And I think Dr. Singh, he feels the same way, right? He has understood that mitochondria has played a role in a much broader scope than anyone is talking about today for over 10 years.
Yeah.
And they're starting to see it in kind of a health of fertility,
mm-hmm.
and it's making a huge impact there. But, like, one of the things he said that was a big aha moment for me was, you imagine your muscles have a lot of mitochondria because
mm-hmm.
you need a lot of power. They literally need more ATP, right? But your skin, your hair, you have a lot less mitochondrial there. So if you imagine for a minute that your muscle has 100 mitochondria, your skin has 10.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose 5 from your muscle, that's 5%, no big deal. But if you lose 5 of those 10 from your skin, from your hair,
mm-hmm.
it's a big difference. You've lost 50% of what's driving those tissues.
That's
right?
Huge. And then if I think about all the toxins we apply to our hair and our scalp every
yeah.
day, that makes me sad, because it's like all the hair color and
yeah.
the, I mean, there's no way that that small limited number of mitochondria can survive that even.
Well, and I always think about it from this perspective. If you have all the best growth factors, you have all the best signals from exosomes, but the cell has no good mitochondria, it doesn't matter what the factors are you're giving it, right? It's out of juice. It's like putting a bunch of add-ons to a car, but not putting any gas in the tank, right?
Right, right. So mitochondrial biogenesis, I think, is
critical
to replace and renew the old dying mitochondria. So that's so fascinating, like bringing this all to the cellular level, and I love how you're innovating that. What do you take every day as your supplements to renew, refresh, rejuvenate? Tired Jordan with the 3-month-old.
The baby has really taxed things in a new way, but I have been quote-unquote biohacking since before that term was popular, because you go through biochemical engineering, you really see the body like a giant biological robot.
Yes.
And my supplement cabinet is a bit like a pharmacy, if I'm honest, but
mm-hmm.
The things that I most, you know, kind of religious about taking
mm-hmm.
are things that are impacting mitochondria.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, you know, antioxidants, of course, in the mix.
No, we want specifics. We need to be super specific with
milligrams
and everything.
There is a supplement I like called Brock Elite, sulforaphane. It's supposed
Ooh.
To be the
like
equivalent.
Like broccoli? B-R-O-C,
yeah.
Brock Elite. Okay.
Yeah, it's something you normally get from eating broccoli, but you'd have
yeah.
to eat about 5 pounds of it to
okay.
get this. And I think that the science behind that looks very interesting, so I take that. I take, you know, NAD, NMN for my
mitochondria. Which brand and what dose?
I take the Elysium brand myself.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
High five. Yeah, okay.
So I've been taking that for many years, and it was one of those things that at first I'm like, is it doing anything? And then I stopped for about 3 months, and I was like, I do notice a difference.
Yeah, I love it for jet lag. It's like I never feel jet lag anymore. And also I really felt like my vision got clearer the first 2-3 months I was on it.
Yeah. And creatine is one that I've learned when you're tired
mm-hmm.
with a 3-month-old,
mm-hmm.
you can actually get a lot more out of the limited energy you have mm-hmm. by supplementing with creatine. So it's not just about lifting weights.
Also
it has a
so
lot
good
of
for muscle growth, though.
Right.
Yeah. And are you taking 5,000 milligrams a day?
5 to 10, depending on, you know, my goals, but yeah,
okay.
five is kind of the standard right now. But if I'm like trying to really gain my weight in the gym, I'll probably take more.
Nice. Yeah. I found some good gummies on Amazon. They're easy to take. Okay, creatine. How about resveratrol?
Yeah, so resveratrol, have some of that. There's a couple other, you know, kind of in this mix, like berberine. There's some I'm forgetting too. There, I have my cabinet kind of clustered by use.
I'm going to follow up with the cabinet photo.
Yeah.
Well, oh, I think we should put that in our story.
And then for your omegas, right, you have to really look through to get good omegas.
Yeah.
I started going Nordic Naturals. I take now something called Fatty 15.
Mm.
That's got some good science behind it.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. So you can easily get on a track of spending a lot on this, and I've tried almost everything out there. And I do try to read the science behind it and make sure it makes some sense. But effectively, if you're doing something about the mitochondria, taking some level of antioxidant, there are some kind of more fringe, I'd say, they're more experimental, they're tied back to like what we've learned from reprogramming. So my doctorate work was all about somatic cell reprogramming. And this has led into the work of David Sinclair. He's popularized this now, where basically during my doctorate we were taking skin cells all the way back to an embryonic state called iPS cells. And the factors involved in that process, they found that if you stop halfway through from skin to embryonic stem cell, there's like a midpoint where you got basically get like a young cell. Mm-hmm. And so there are some small molecules that they found in some preliminary studies that seem to encourage the same behavior,
mm-hmm.
effectively epigenetic modifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know exercise is probably the biggest epigenetic modifier, so there's no pill out there that's going to save you from doing exercise. So let me just say that. I think everyone's on the Ozempic craze these days, thinking, oh, I can take a pill or a shot and I don't have to do anything. But everything that we've seen in the data is you still got to work out.
It's not about the weight, it's about the other benefits of the blood flow, circulation,
all
of that, endorphins even. But yeah, you have to have movement, otherwise frailty happens.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to combat, like that we want to live a long time, but we don't want to be frail.
Right.
And that's the human condition,
sadly.
Frailty.
Well, and my personal belief is that 5-10 years from now, they will not prescribe Ozempic without giving you something to deal with the fact that about 40% of the weight loss is muscle loss.
Yeah. Didn't you have a product or something you were going to tell me about related to muscle building?
So we took the company public at the end of 2023,
mm-hmm.
and then we split the parent company into two companies, one that is focused on cosmeceuticals, Elevi Skincare, and then Elevi Bio, which is focused on really taking things through the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And we identified a molecule that had been through phase one studies in Korea that was designed for muscular dystrophy, and again, to prevent that muscle loss, and it acts on activin A and myostatin.
Mm.
So myostatin is well studied in terms of being sort of a genetic limiter of your muscle growth.
Mm-hmm.
And where it's failed in muscular dystrophy for many reasons, I think it will have success in this group of GLP-1 agonists. So we're aiming to get that through phase two and commercialize it with a GLP-1 agonist so you can preserve that muscle and lose fat at the same time. And they have seen this in animals already.
What if the study showed, so you have in vitro studies, and then do you have animal in vivo?
Well, so the molecules we have two, EL22 and EL23. EL22 has gone through phase one in humans, so it's been shown to be safe, but it was tied to DMD, so we might have to do a bridge to get it into phase two human studies in the U.S., but that's the goal. The in vitro studies shown that they're not losing muscle, but more utility with the muscle. There's something called a rotarod test that they do on mice that shows that function.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been studies by Regeneron and others that have come out in posters that they've shown they can get increase in or decrease in fat while preserving or even increasing muscle. So that's kind of the holy grail, right? If you can gain muscle and lose fat at the same time.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That dives deep into the science. So you have to we have to go back to remedial molecular biology for that. But I'm so excited for your guys' progress, and I like how you stand up and talk real science and try to teach the audience about coming back to the basics of, like, really, there's so many good products out there, and you can find the best ones by looking at their beginning science.
Yeah, and this is what it was for me, too, was just going back to the beginning, going back to the cellular level, saying what's going on. And I think that's really the difference between what we offer and others, is that we've looked at every detail. And we built this on the latest data.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what I've seen on the market is built on things that are 5-10 years old, and you wouldn't buy a cell phone that's 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want skincare that was developed over 10 years ago?
Yes, exactly. 10, 20 years. Some of these things are patented now for 20 years and they haven't changed any of the formulating technology or the manufacturing technology.
Yeah.
Let's do a rapid fire. I'm going to
okay.
ask you a few quick things if you're a morning person or night person.
Night person.
Yeah. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Yoga or weights?
Weights, for sure.
Do you like to sleep or party?
Probably party.
I wouldn't be like sleep.
These days it's sleep, for sure.
Yeah, right? Beach or mountain?
Ooh, mountain.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool. And then just really quick, one word thought on salmon spur.
Oh, so these polynucleotides in different formats, in my book, it's more hype, and the reason that it does what it does, because I'm not saying it doesn't have an effect, I think there is an effect, is that you're taking foreign animal DNA, and your body is built to sense invaders, whether that's bacterial, fungal, or another species. So when you're injecting in animal DNA, your immune system is going to detect that and have an immune response. And so that immune response is going to lead to swelling, redness, possibly pain. And are you going to get something that looks and feels like you're getting an improvement? Probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it actually specifically driving collagen production? I think it's more of a side effect, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So does it do something? Yeah, I think it probably does. Is it working in the way that they're telling you it is? I don't know if I buy that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. How about other new things that you've seen out there on the market? What do you think of pDRNA is the salmon sperm.
Mm-hmm.
Polynucleotides that are coming up mixed with amino acids and peptides.
You know, I think adding anything to the polynucleotides is just meant to strengthen what it's basically doing. Amino acids are great, but you're getting them from all over the place. I don't think that in itself is a big enough mover. I think peptides are good. Peptides are short. Like, so if you have the full protein, a peptide is a shorter chain that's meant to do the same thing as a larger chain, so it gets in a little easier. But generally speaking, you know, this is where the paradigm shift is for us, right? You have all these hero ingredient products. They have one ingredient, whether
mm-hmm.
it's polynucleotides or hyaluronic acid or vitamin C, and they do one thing, maybe two, really well. But we said, what's going on in young skin? Let's get away from this hero ingredient paradigm. Let's stop trying to add an 11th product to your 10-step routine here, right? Like, when does it end,
yeah.
right? If you think about all the factors that are out there, right? You think about all the cells, because your skin is not one cell type, right? You've got all these different cell types, and you can think about the stem cell almost like the conductor of the orchestra of
mm-hmm.
these cell types, and they're producing all kinds of factors. So there's literally hundreds of thousands of factors, but if you imagine for a second that it's A to Z, one of these factors, one of these peptides, it's like one letter.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been putting back one letter at a time, one letter at a time. How long before you say, okay, enough is enough. I don't need 40 products, 20 products, whatever, it's too much. The beauty of the exosome is that we're going to a stem cell. We're triggering that stem cell in the laboratory to basically trick it into believing that damage has occurred.
Yeah.
So then it's releasing a set of signals that is in line with repair and regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the signal you want to purify out. That's the signal that you want to use to boost, because as we age, our regenerative capacity is going down and the amount of damage is building up and the insults to our body are building up. And so
your body technically doesn't need any additives. Like, it knows how to do this.
It just has
turned it off or muted it or just gotten a little lazy. So it just needs those triggers to reactivate.
And I'll often use that analogy too, that it's like the cells can still read. They might not be writing the same message. They might not be producing as much, as we know they're producing less and less of a lot of things like collagen, elastin as we age, but they can still read a message.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have the mechanism to produce that. And so whereas like collagen, you can think about like throwing your skin a pile of wood and asking for a piece of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
The exosome is like an IKEA kit,
mm-hmm.
right? You're putting down the wood, the tools, the screws,
instructions.
The instructions.
So what to do with that? The
right.
instructions are the critical messaging.
And that's all in one package, right? And that's,
yeah.
if you remember from high school biology, you got the DNA that goes into the RNA. The RNA goes into the ribosome kicks out the protein.
Mm-hmm.
So that RNA, that is your blueprint. That is your message that tells the cell how to spit out the protein.
How about platelet-derived growth factor?
Yeah, so platelet-derived growth factor is, again, like one letter, one factor in this array of factors. It's an important one, but we should be careful not to over-assign too much power to one factor. The thing that worries me is that we know in the past that people have made EGF products, and then they said, oh, I have this much, and the next company says, I have 10 times that. The next company says, I have 100 times that.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to this you know, super physiological levels, way, way higher than would ever be in your body. And with EGF specifically, that is not something you want to turn up. That can be oncogenic.
Yeah,
and
epidermal growth factors.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, every growth factor, you know, it's just a piece of this big story. And, like, we really don't know what we're doing until we've time-tested it. But this PDGF has been around for 20 years now, so hopefully that has some sustainability and also, like, safety efficacy profile.
I think it's the science is there that it's doing some interesting things. I do worry about the marketing around the levels of how much of this one thing you're putting in. And I think we've got to be careful not to assign, because really the point of exosomes is not to give you a ginormous amount of one growth factor, but to give you an array.
Right.
Right.
How about PRP, like compared to PRP?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of PRP, PRF?
Yeah, I think PRP is, I often speak next to Charles Reynolds, who's famous for the vampire facial, right? And, you know, I think that work is great. It's the thing is, though, you're pulling from your body. So the
That's
older,
like you're using your exosomes, basically.
Your platelet exosomes, yeah.
Yes.
So I think we should separate that. Platelet exosomes and stem cell exosomes are very different in what the quality and what you're getting inside. And the quality is dependent on you, depending on your platelets. So like we see people in their 30s and 40s get amazing results with PRP, and people over 60, 70, they're complaining they're not getting good results. And it really depends on your own body. You could be pulling from a dry well. And it also depends on how you treat it, right? There are different ways to get different quality of PRP depending on how you treat it. But I think you will find platelet-derived growth factor in there, right?
Yeah.
And that's, in my mind, is kind of the first signaler, right? So if you cut yourself, the platelets come to the surface, they signal to your stem cells. And so if you're putting PRP on, it's like turning up the fire alarm. It's turning up that signal so that you're activating your own stem cells that much more. But again, if you're older and your stem cell populations aren't as good, I would rather have an H0 stem cell that's producing everything in the right amounts and take that signal. And that's the reason we've come with these kind of products, because we know that no matter how good, how healthy you are, the average 60, 70, 80-year-old is never going to be equivalent to what you can get from an H0 stem cell, in my opinion.
Well, this has been amazing. You guys, did you learn so much today? I definitely did, and it's such a good refresher on and a look into the future of what's to come. So, Jordan, where can people find you if they want to connect and chat with you further?
Yeah, so elevyskincare.com, that's our website. You can see our products there. You can connect with me through contact@elevyskincare.com. That's probably the best. It'll eventually funnel its way to me. And yeah, we are found at most derms and plastics that are doing regenerative skincare these days.
Amazing. You guys have to check him out. He's going to be lecturing at the American Academy of Facial Plastic Surgery in 2024 with us in New Orleans. If you're around, you should definitely come. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. Would love to have you try some of our amazing skincare. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.